Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we're discussing Season 3, the 14th episode of Season 3, the 40th episode overall, The Dark Phoenix Part 2, The Inner Circle.
numbers.
I know. Really keeping count here.
Yes.
Which is important now more than ever because X-Men was taken off of Hulu in the past week, which is quite distressing news.
Yeah. So we've been going in, like, the Hulu order, and
right.
Now we'll see what happens.
Now we're going off, like, our old bootleg episode file order.
Mm-hmm. So we might get a repeat at some point, right?
Well, we'll skip
depending
a repeat.
On the order. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
It should be fine. Yeah. So, I mean, if you've been following along on Hulu, too, you know, there's other ways to see the show. I'm not going to outright say how, but I think you could use your imagination if you're of our generation, as I suspect you all are.
Mm-hmm. So catch up.
Some
or
internet
live
corners.
Vicariously through us.
That's right. I mean, we do a pretty good job narrating the episodes anyway. So, yeah, there's more than one way to consume the X-Men TAS show now. Thanks to us.
All right.
All right. Also, after we're done talking about this episode, we just literally came from the movie theater. We saw Star Wars The Last Jedi.
We're bursting with news to tell about it.
Bursting with nerdgasms. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's jump right into this episode. So I think very impressively, this episode pulls a lot of stuff directly from the comic book on which it's based on.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned last week, they even include in the credits at the beginning based on stories by Chris Claremont, the mastermind behind a bulk of the X-Men mythology. Not the originator, that credit belongs to Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, but certainly the myth blower upper raider, for lack of a better word. So this is some real, like, heavy Chris Claremont stuff. And it opens with Xavier in the mansion. He's trying to seek the X-Men out with his mental powers, and he can't seem to find them. As you recall in the last episode, the X-Men were captured by the Inner Circle, otherwise known as the Hellfire Club. But
For the purposes of this show,
right? Yeah,
the Inner Circle.
And before we get too much further, some of our Facebook fans mentioned some interesting facts about the Hellfire Club.
Well, mainly, it's real.
Yeah,
is the point, right?
I was sure it wasn't real.
So there's a Wikipedia page. If you want to read all the details, you can go look up the Hellfire Club on Wikipedia. But it's essentially like a fancy gentleman's club that was started, I guess, in like the 1700s. There were like a bunch of these types of clubs, but it's a very like eyes wide shut type of situation where it was kind of just like a ruse for like these high society people to like, I don't know, do like risque things behind closed doors.
Well, there's like a long weird history of that stuff amongst the upper class in the annals of history, right? Weird ceremonies, weird get-togethers, weird rituals, weird orgies, and, like, weirdness.
Uh-huh.
So that was interesting to learn that the Hellfire Club is based on a real thing.
Yeah.
So thanks again, Chris Claremont, for opening our eyes, the peasant class's eyes,
yeah.
to the ongoing shenanigans of the upper crust. So that's interesting. So anyway, like I said, Professor X is searching out the X-Men, and then he's like, he gets Cerebro's help. And I thought it was kind of funny that we haven't really talked about before, but Cerebro, you know, Professor X refers to it. He's like, Cerebro, help me. And then it's like, yeah, sure. But it's in Professor X's voice.
Yeah. He's really talking to himself.
Yeah. I just thought that was worth mentioning. That's
yeah.
kind of funny. He
also
programs his computer with his own voice.
Right, yeah. I like the animation sequence in that opening part where Professor X can't immediately psychically find Cyclops and who he's looking for. And so he does this, like, mental projection thing where, like, the viewer, like, the camera is, like, flying through the hallways and rooms of this mansion,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, like, I really like the dynamic nature of that shot sequence. But then, like, the metal door closes down in front of you, and it's over, and that's when he has to call in Cerebro. And even Cerebro isn't able to help him in this case.
Yeah, but Cerebro lets him know that a computer and a mutant is blocking him. And that mutant turns out to be Emma Frost, the White Queen. Mm-hmm. So Xavier is not really much help in this episode.
She's really beaming some green electricity into the wall panel from her brain.
Yeah, I like that they decided that her psychic power is green-colored in this show. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's really the case in the comics. Maybe at times, I don't know. But it's always funny to pick a color. And so now we find the X-Men where we left them in the last episode. We've got Gambit, Rogue, Beast, Storm, and Cyclops all chained up, all wearing those famous Genosha mutant collars. Mm-hmm. Those things have appeared in many episodes now. A real convenient sort of plot device object.
Yeah, well, how else are the X-Men going to be stopped, you know?
Right.
There has to be some way for the viewer to look at them and be like, oh, they can't use their powers right now.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks to Dr. Adler, our old pal, who actually turned out to be Apocalypse, or Mystique, one of the two. But I guess Apocalypse invented those collars, so interesting. So we mentioned all these X-Men that are captured, but we left one out, and that is Wolverine. Mm-hmm. So just like the comic books, he was sort of blasted into the sewer basement of this inner circle Hellfire Club mansion. I guess it looks like it's by Central Park somewhere. And so he's going to rescue the X-Men. So we finally see the famous shot pulled directly from the comics of Wolverine emerging from the sewer water, like his back like arched at a 3/4 angle or something, and his claws pop out. And it's a very dramatic image, very famous.
Right, light shining in over the sewer grate gives him like a crosshatch pattern of shadow on him. It is very
dramatic. Very dutifully recreated for the purpose of the show. This episode, like a real, like wonderful tribute to the comics in a lot of ways. The creators just said, yeah, you know, the comics got it right. Why really mess with them?
Yeah.
And so we see Wolverine sort of skulking around the sewers. The Hellfire Club goons are tracking him. And again, like, you know, more stuff pulled from the comics. There's even the famous monologue they adapt where Wolverine intimidates a guy just by talking to him, saying, like, I know what you're thinking, bub, that this Wolverine with his claws is going to, like, cut you up like a hot knife through butter. I'd be afraid, too. You know, that's not exactly what he says, but
something like that.
Right, but that's
pretty good.
Yeah, pretty much from the comic book. Like, really great stuff. Also, like, a scene later, he's, like, he gets a little higher up in the mansion, and he's in the kitchen, and, like, is, you know, has a bottle of wine, and he's also cuts off a turkey leg, and, like, one of my favorite lines in the show is, turkey. I don't actually think he says, he just sort of...
No, he just says, turkey.
Yeah. He's just, it's almost like a power-up for him in a video game. So Wolverine is on the way to rescue his pals. But in the meantime, the Inner Circle Hellfire Club is messing with the X-Men. But sort of right before they do, they've won. And they're sort of bickering amongst themselves, like, what to do next. Mm-hmm. Jean's been anointed the Black Queen to Emma's White Queen. And, you know, she's in a really scandalously weird outfit.
Well, it's kind of the same as the White Queen's outfit. It's just black. And blue
it's like
instead
of white. It's like the same theme, but it doesn't look the same.
It's the same. It's like a corset, like a lace-up corset, and then a big billowing cape.
She's got a blue-red cape, yeah.
And necklace with spikes on it.
Yeah.
I guess the White Queen doesn't have spikes around her neck.
And her hair's done up in this weird, like, 19th, 18th century bouffant that's very, like, bizarre. So Jean, it seems, like, really, like, happy to be in her new role here as this evil pawn of the Hellfire Club. But, like,
She's brainwashed, so it's not that she's happy. She's just complacent, I think.
Right, yeah. And, she's brainwashed, but she's also, like, feeding off the power that their evilness is giving her.
Right.
With the Phoenix entity in her brain. Mm-hmm. But like I said, they're sort of all sort of bickering over her. Like, there's a weird moment where Wingard goes to Emma, and he's like, don't worry, my love. Now that I control Jean, I can control the Hellfire Club as well. And
Which is funny, because so far we've only seen, like, three members of the Hellfire Club, so...
Well, I mean, it's this whole, like, it's this whole organization, like we mentioned in the last one. It's like where, like, rich people go to hang out, but these are the inner circle of it. Yeah. Like, they're all powerful mutants. So, but it's weird that, like, it looks like Wingard, who's secretly Mastermind, and Emma Frost have a thing, but also... Emma Frost is jealous that Sebastian Shaw is hitting on Jean. So there's, like, some bizarre, like, dangerous love triangles going on. And I like that, you know, they hint at them rather than, like, go deeply into them. You know, the X-Men show does a good job of summarizing narrative plot lines very efficiently without having to get into nitty-gritty. You get the idea. So, you know, they're all sort of like Shaw and Wingard are now sort of butting heads because they've got this great new power and who controls it. So right away, Shaw challenges Wingard to have Jean, like, kill Cyclops because obviously in real life they're in love. And so it's like at this moment that actually, I mean, that's not like quite that. I jumped ahead a little bit. It's similar. At this point, like, Scott's reaching out to Jean with his own... He has his a
mind. Even though he's not psychic, he has this bond with Jean.
So he just says her name, Jean, Jean, with his mind.
In his brain,
Sometimes I try to say that to you, and you don't respond. I just think to myself, Sonia, Sonia.
Sorry, I never felt it.
Our bond deeper than love still in question, perhaps. But anyway, so... Emma and Wingard detect that Scott's trying to get to Jean, so Scott finds himself in Jean's mind, which he comments on how, like, dark and empty it is. He's surprised. He's like, that's not your mind. I've been here before. It's a lot more fun. There's, like, a carnival.
He says, oh, could this be your mind, this dark place?
But it gives it, to me, it gave me the impression that he's been in her mind before, because why wouldn't he? Especially, she's a psychic.
It gave me the impression he's never been there before.
Well, like I said, let me just draw us out. Like, she's a psychic. They're, like, together all the time. You know, they have this psychic bond. So it's like, hey, Scott, come into my head and, like, let's explore. I feel like that must have happened at some point.
There's something gross about that.
I'm not saying it's not gross. I'm just saying that, like, to him, to me, him remarking on the darkness of her mind's like, this is not what your mind looks like.
See, this is why I haven't been responding to your psychic signals.
You're trying to keep me out of your dark, dark mind. But Wingard shows up in her mind and he's shocked to see him. He's like, what are you doing in Jean's mind? And he sets to blast him with his optic blast, but they don't work, and he pulls off his mask. And he's like, my eyes! And I'm always, like, stunned how shocked Cyclops is whenever his powers don't work.
Well, he's used to it being like that.
Yeah, I know. But it's just funny to see that, like, well, I mean, come on, Scott. Like, you're in a... You're not in even a real place. You're in a psychic world. Why would you think your powers would automatically work the way they're supposed to? So, like, you know, his out, his shocker surprise at that not being the case is a little funny to me. And but, you know, Wingard, for some reasons, like, wants to challenge him to the death. It seems like he could just kill him if he wanted to right away. But instead he, like, puts Cyclops in a pirate outfit. And gives him a, like, a bronze sword, and they
and he slaps him across the face, and he's like, a duel.
Does that does he slap him? That's funny. We just saw a real dehumanizing slap in a certain movie today. Remember that scene?
No.
All right, never mind. It's not important. I don't want to spoil. The Star Wars anyway. So all right, so they start dueling. So Scott's, like, surprisingly good at fighting with the sword. I don't know, like, how much fencing he does in the Danger Room, but apparently enough.
Well, a lot of his fighting technique seems to be based on gymnastics, though. He's really good at, like,
he's an excellent gymnast.
Ducking out of the way and, like, doing a little flip over his opponent and stuff. That's standard X-Men
stuff. I mean, if you read, like, the Wikipedia page on the X-Men and their powers, and you read about Cyclops, they're like, he's a master at, like, you know, karate-level, you know, ninja skills. He could, which means he could, with his eyes blindfolded, he could take out nine men, you know? And it's like, wow, really? So, yeah, so you're right. He has extensive training. He's a master fighter. He's a real superhero. So, but, you know, they're fighting along, and then it's actually sort of surprising that, you know, Scott gets defeated and he actually gets stabbed. So this is a show that doesn't like to show stabbings.
But it's not real. It's in Gene's mind.
Right.
So.
But they remark that it's supposed to be real.
Yeah.
Like, so he gets stabbed off screen, but you hear a gross, like, stab noise. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's dead. And they remark, this as well, once the psychic image is destroyed, he can never be alive. You know, another twist, it turns out he is alive because he still has a psychic bond with Gene, and Gene is, you know, can't really let him die yet. She's not fully brainwashed, as you put it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Scott's down for the count for the time being. The other X-Men are really shocked. But this is when the circle, the inner circle, and their little rivalries start to heat up, because that's when Shaw challenges Wingard to have Gene kill Cyclops for good. So
under the guise of, like, testing out his powers over Gene and, like, being able to control her the way that he says he can.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, around this time that Wolverine is, like, busted up to the top level, too, and he's trying to save the X-Men. And also Wingard. Oh, I kind of overran this. There's a lot happening in this episode. A lot of confusing events. Wingard also challenges Shaw for the leadership of the Inner Circle.
Mm-hmm.
Because now he controls the Dark Phoenix, so who could stop him? And all the Inner Circle people betray Shaw and decide to back Wingard.
I'm going to be honest right now. Yeah. This is not my favorite Dark Phoenix episode.
Really?
All these things that have happened so far are pretty boring to me.
What a slap in the face to Chris Claremont.
Sorry, Chris Claremont. I like the sequence where Wolverine is exiting from the sewers, and
yeah,
I like Professor X talking to Cerebro, but, like, most of the things that are happening in this episode are, like, petty arguments between these, like, rich snobs,
yeah,
and they're not characters that I'm really invested with, because we've only seen them for one episode so far, and, like, I can, like, barely tell the difference between Shaw and Wingard, if I'm gonna be really...
They're all,
like,
wearing similar clothing, and
yeah,
they're all... like snobs, like you said.
Right. So anyway, there's a payoff coming at the end of this episode, so I do like the episode still. Mm-hmm. And the overall series is great, and all of this, like, character development and plot points are important to, yeah, it. But
you don't like this diversion into the Hellfire Club?
No,
to
I
get
really
to the
don't
Dark
care
Phoenix
about them.
Gooey center.
No.
I'll disagree with you. I like this episode, but mainly it's because I love the comic it's based on. I think the comic is way richer than what they give us in this episode, just because, you know.
That makes sense, yeah.
There's, like, a lot more going on with dialogue, and a lot more of the psychological stuff we see in this episode is played out. And I'll give you an example at the end,
okay,
of, like, how the comic is, like, really way more superior and, like, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think this episode does a decent job at adapting the comic, and, like I said, it's pretty faithful to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to disagree with you a little bit. I don't mind this episode, and I think as a fan of the comics, you get a kick seeing it all come to life, mm-hmm, to an extent. So it's pretty cool to see the Hellfire Club and these characters, and, like, following the path that Chris Claremont laid out.
I can see that.
So, but I can also see your point of view too, where it's, like, kind of silly and, like, not as engaging. So
yeah,
that's fair.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway. So, you know, there's this, like, struggle for the leadership of the Inner Circle. It looks like Wingard has, you know, come out on top. But, like we said, Wolverine's busting in, and Jean is trying to, like, stop Wolverine. She, like, when she uses her powers as the Dark Phoenix, it's actually pretty brutal.
Yeah.
She's got this real, like, velvety, like, rich fire beam that blasts out of her hands.
I thought it was supposed to look like a bird talon.
It is, but it's on fire, right? So
yeah,
it's like this really painful looking fire,
yeah,
blast.
This is the payoff I'm talking about.
Right. So she's awesome, like, melting Wolverine, although it doesn't look like that. It looks like he's just being shocked by,
yeah,
electricity. But in that moment, she remembers her times with Wolverine.
Right.
And we get a flashback to earlier episodes from season one where he's professing her love to her while he's practicing karate in his room.
Yeah.
So a nice little callback there.
Yeah. But it's a touching moment, and it, like,
right,
shows you, like, Gene's humanity is still alive somewhere in there.
And another love triangle.
In the
midst of all these other love triangles.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's enough to, like, confuse Gene and allow her to regain her senses for a minute. And the Hellfire Club is still trying to manipulate her. Like, gee, now kill this, now kill Sebastian Shaw. That's what Wingard says next. But it's at this suggestion that, like, Tark Phoenix takes over Jean's mind and, like, is kind of set free. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of doing that, she frees the X-Men, and she kind of flies away. She's sort of, like, beginning her cackling as Dark Phoenix a little bit. So she's like, you play amongst yourselves or something. And the X-Men immediately start beating the crap out of the Hellfire Club. Wolverine blasts that fat Leland guy, the guy who can do, like, purple gravity, blasts him through three walls. Like, I don't know how he's not dead from that. Storm, like, electrocutes Emma Frost pretty violently. Mm-hmm. You know, Rogue's going at it with the robot arm man, and Shaw is, like, trying his best against, like, Beast and then Storm again.
Yeah.
So the X-Men are, it's a nice little fight scene.
You know, Beast says something interesting.
Yeah, this is a great moment, yeah.
Where he says, oh, if only for a heat wave or something like that. Did you catch that line from
him?
Yes,
I thought you were going to say something else.
No.
All right, let me say what I'm going to say about Beast's first interesting line. He's fighting Shaw, and he spins him around with his feet.
Uh-huh.
And Beast is like, you cannot absorb what is not, like, directed into you. And Shaw's like, haha, Beast, actually I am absorbing the energy you're using against me. And then he's able to sort of, like, throw Beast into the wall. I thought you were going to talk about that weird power. Because Beast is just, like, beating him up, essentially. But Shaw can still absorb mutant energy.
You know, I'll accept that explanation, though. Okay. I don't think that's so out of the ordinary.
All right.
He's saying, like, all right, you're using kinetic energy on me. Now that kinetic energy is mine. That's in line with his powers. I'm fine
okay.
with that.
All right, very well.
But
then Storm freezes Shaw.
Right.
She summons the cold and ice.
Right.
And then Beast has the line afterwards, like you were talking about.
Right.
Summon a heat wave.
Right. So that's my question. We really don't see Storm do that. Can she summon a heat wave? All of her powers are around, like, precipitation and, like, coldness.
Well, we've discussed before that Storm can modulate her body temperature.
Yeah.
So she's always at, like, a nice, like, beautiful temperature of, like, 72 degrees, no matter where she is, in the Arctic snow or in the hot sun.
Right.
So does a heat wave fall as weather?
I think it does.
If she can create, like, moisture,
uh-huh.
then that would increase the temperature, right?
No.
I don't know how humidity works.
Well, she can bring, like, blasts of cold and wind and stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So if she can
she's
create
creating
the
a cloud.
Absence of heat... then she can... It would stand to reason she can create the presence of heat also, no?
Okay, this is what she's doing. She's creating clouds, and from those clouds, weather emerges, be it lightning, snow, ice, or maybe in the case, like, heat.
Uh-huh.
Because doesn't... like I said, I don't know how weather works. I was going to say, like, doesn't humidity have something to do with the clouds, but maybe not. It has to do with the moisture in the air, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that doesn't have to do with the sun.
Anyway.
I don't think she can make a heat wave. Facebook group, let us know.
I mean, we've discussed before, like...
She can't, but maybe
volcanoes
she can make...
and earthquakes do not fall under her jurisdiction because that's not weather, that's
right.
like, geological.
She
but
can
I think
make...
a heat wave is weather, that's not geological.
She can make, like, a tornado or a hurricane.
Uh-huh.
Or, like, could she make the rain warm?
Right.
That's the question. Like, can she control the temperature of the water? I mean, she can, because she can make the temperature of the water cold enough to snow
mm-hmm.
or to be ice.
Mm-hmm.
But she can inversely make it hot to be, like, hot, like, jungle rain.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
I want to know that, too. Okay. So we're asking the Facebook group. But
okay.
We're really exploring the limits of Storm's power on this show. So the X-Men, like we said, they're fighting... the Hellfire Club. Wolverine gets his revenge on Leland. There's a cool shot of him, like, jumping from, like, a higher level on top of him, and Leland's blasting his purple energy at him, but that only, you know, goes to make Wolverine's attack that much more deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually from the comics too, I believe. His gravity sinking power doesn't work when someone's right on top of him. It works against him.
Mm-hmm.
We see, like, disaster at the Hellfire Club. A bunch of the members escape. Emma, like, gets out the front door just before the cops come. Shaw and the Pierce guy, the guy with the robot arm, after Rogue rips his arm off, they escape in the secret book tunnels.
She has a good quip when she rips off his arm. Thanks for lending me a hand. I hear these things cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that guy did not deserve to have a middle arm. He was using it for evil. Not like Luke Skywalker, who needed a metal hand to get through life. Anyway, I'm weaving in more Star Wars into this conversation. So they escape through the tunnels, and Shaw, in a few lines, resumes his leadership, saying that Wingard was a fool. We never should have listened to him, but I will restore the Hellfire Club. We can never be defeated. Mm-hmm. So perhaps we'll hear from them again, perhaps not. In the comics, definitely, for sure. But Wingard, he's been looking for Jean this whole time because he figures if I can control Jean, I can control the Phoenix, which is the most powerful entity, and I'll be powerful myself. So it's at this point that he finds Jean on the roof of the Hellfire Club, and he tries his old tricks. This time, Dark Phoenix is not having it.
Right. She sniffs him out right away.
Yeah, she breaks his illusion in a really satisfying animation where he, like, creates, like, that 19th century, like, veneer around her, mm-hmm. but she just shatters it like glass.
Yeah.
And then she grabs him with her Phoenix Talon and destroys the illusion he has around his physical image, and mm-hmm. he reveals him to be the, like, decrepit old man that he is, mastermind.
Right.
And then, okay, so this is what I wanted to talk to you about. Then she's like, you wanted my power? Here, take a look at it. And she flies into his mind, and it puts him in, like, a catatonic state, and he's left drooling.
Yeah.
So now, like, that, okay, I mean, that was what it was, is like, whatever. But in the comic, it's way more interesting, because Dark Phoenix, it's like the same thing. She goes into Mastermind's mind, and she's like, you wanted my power? Do you, like, I'll give you, like, everything you ever wanted, like, the total, like, absolute understanding of the universe or something. Like, she says, like, something really, like, philosophically insane. Like, I'll give you, like, complete knowledge of all things that ever were.
Uh-huh.
And they describe in the comic, like, what's that like for this guy? You know, like, his reality is shredded and reassembled, and, you know, his brain is, like, turned to jelly, you know, because it's kind of like the ending of the horrible movie Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, where the alien, like, zaps the Russian Kate Blanchett woman with, like, all the information of the universe, and she gets zombified.
Right, as a result. It's too overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah. So he gets, like, that's his punishment. He's not dead. I think, like, in the comics were sort of led to believe he's dead, but I think Mastermind isn't dead. I think he comes back at some point. He recovers. Mm. I'm not too sure about that. Someone can fact check that, but she doesn't quite kill him, but she does, like, break his brain. So, like I said, that's, like, the richness that the comic can go into, like, a little more insanely. Mm. And, like, in general, going forward, the comics will be a lot more darker with the Dark Phoenix story than the cartoon's going to be able to give us.
Right.
So, at this point, Cyclops finds Jean, Dark Phoenix, on the roof, and he's like, oh, Jean, you're great. You're back to normal. She's like, nope. I'm freed from the constraints of sympathy and morality that binds ordinary humans, and now I'm, like, totally free. And
right. I've tasted evil. I need more.
I am fire-made flesh.
let me quickly transform into my Phoenix outfit.
Yeah, we see her Dark Phoenix outfit for the second time, and it's going to be a little more permanent now.
Yeah.
And, you know,
she gets her red crazy hair like fire.
Yeah, yeah. And her voice is really dark and demonic sounding.
Yeah.
She sounds totally possessed.
Now this is the payoff that I was waiting for the whole episode.
This is what you were waiting for. Yeah. This is the scene you liked. Yeah, when she becomes awesome. Like completely unhinged.
No, starting from the part where she like electrifies, what's his name?
Mastermind,
yeah, where she like shatters that illusion. Like starting from there, like
that was
the last
cool.
like
yeah.
5 minutes of the episode are gold.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's going to lead to pretty satisfying next two episodes, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an interesting. The Dark Phoenix story is an interesting tale.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's overall it's always going to be better in the comics because it was like one of the most classic tales told of X-Men, and it was like more about like the story of a young woman like. Like, you know, growing up and, like, experiencing crazy power. Like, there's, like, a lot more of a metaphor going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean is more of a character in the comics than she is in the cartoon.
Yeah.
In the cartoon, she's, like, a mature adult. And it's just, like, this random thing that happens to her. Whereas in the comic book, it's, like, more tied up.
A self-discovery sort of thing.
Yeah, it's, like, more tied up with, like, who she is and, like, where she is in her life and, like, all the things. You know, it's a little more interesting in the comic. But still, they do a decent job here. So, any last words on the Dark Phoenix before we talk a little bit about Star Wars?
No.
All right. Very good. We'll be back with the Dark Phoenix next week. Okay, but now Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
Okay, let me change brain channels.
All right, yeah, me too. All right, so we are enormous Star Wars fans, as I'm sure many of you are. Should we do spoiler warnings, or should we could we talk about it without doing spoilers? I don't want to like go into like a 25-minute review here. I just want to talk like about for 10 minutes or something. So, like, could we avoid spoilers, you think, and just give our impressions, or?
Yes. Let's try.
Let's give a tacit spoiler warning. If we have to go there, we'll say, like, spoilers if you haven't seen it. You know, in a few weeks, everyone in the universe will have seen this movie, so it's, like, it'll be quickly out of date.
You know, I think, like, Star Wars is quickly going to get that same sort of thing that, like, Marvel and DC movies get, where, like, they have such a strong fan base and people who love the whole universe that's created, but then also they're going to start sloughing off people that were in it for, like, the novelty, and now they're like, another Star Wars movie. Why am I going to bother?
I think that's going to start happening.
Yeah, I would have if it hasn't already.
I mean, it was exciting when The Force Awakens was announced, because it's like, oh, here's a chance to make up for the prequels, which I think you and I both agree were terrible and pretty unwatchable. So, like, that was exciting. Oh, Star Wars done right. But then it's like when Disney was like, oh, yeah, and we're going to do a Star Wars movie every year from now until the end of time.
Right.
And then you're like, what? And Rogue One, like, came out, and that was, like, a meaningless movie.
You know what? I liked Rogue One, and I also liked Episode 7.
Right.
But it's like I was saying to you earlier today, like, I wish that they used their powers a little more sparingly. Like, to me, like, Episode 7, Episode 8, Episode 9, like, it's... I'm interested. Like, I'm already bought in, but then when they start throwing in Rogue One and, like, these other movies with extra, like, characters and a totally, like, separate timeline. Yeah. Like,
they'll do the Han Solo movie and the Boba Fett movie and, like, the Yoda movie.
You know, it's just, like, who cares? Quality over quantity, which is not to say, like, I'm enjoying them so far. It's not like they're terrible or anything like that. Like, I think
Rogue One wasn't good.
I think they are, like, restoring, like, people's faith in Star Wars in general.
Yeah, that's true.
After, like, a bad run with the prequels, but, like... And that's, like, a general commentary with the movies, too. Like, there are really, like, good things in the movies in terms of, like, characters and, like, scenery choice. And, like, they're bringing us new worlds all the time. And, like, it's cool. The powers that exist within the Force are, like, really cool. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's overkill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, like...
Well, here's what I'll say. Like... When The Phantom Menace was announced in the mid to late 90s, it was super exciting because there was, like, a 16-year gap between Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And then George Lucas in that time basically said, like, Star Wars is over. I'm never doing Star Wars again.
Yeah.
So people, it was like this Star Wars was this mythical thing.
Right.
And through the 80s and 90s, I don't know if, I mean, I think our generation understands, but, like, there weren't too many movies that could top what Star Wars achieved in going back to 1977.
Yeah.
It was so ahead of its time. It was such a marvel of special effects and so the storytelling was so at, like, the finest, like, pulpy comic bookness that it's like nothing, like, had really come close.
Right.
So the idea that, like, it was coming back with The Phantom Menace was, like, sent people's minds into crazy mode.
Yeah, yeah.
They ratcheted up the expectations to, like, such an insane level.
Right.
And you know, it's like, and who could live up to that?
Well,
but also, like, The Phantom Menace didn't turn out to be, like, good on any level, really.
Right.
But the point is, it's like that gap of a long time, it made it seem like this is a once in a generation event.
Right.
And that's what, like, speaking to what you said, like, overkill, it's like Disney's just, like, stepping over themselves to make Star Wars movies when a lot of the magic was, like, these are rare things.
Yeah.
They're only going to come around, like, once every 10, 15 years.
Right.
In the old days, there's 3 long years between the movies. Now they're, like, releasing one every year.
Yeah.
And I get that there's 2 years between each saga movie, but still 2 years is not 3 years. There's 3 years between each of the prequels, I think, until Revenge of the Sith. They made that a little quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, like, Star Wars is now, like, just, like, they're just, like, piping them out, like, really fast.
There's just something about it that, like...
It's like there is a specialness to the event of seeing Star Wars.
Specialness is the thing. Sometimes less is more. And I think, like, that that kind of feeling has really been lost.
Well, and I think that speaks to, like, you know, I think it speaks to the problems I have with the episodes 7 and 8. And which, I'm just going to say, like, I enjoy them generally, and
yeah,
I'm a fan.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Like, I really like the new direction, the new characters, and, like, it's exciting to see a lot of the callbacks.
That's a lot of the stuff that's kind of been, like, rectified since... Because to me, like, episodes 1, 2, and 3, the plots were kind of
it was all weak, wooden. It was like, weak.
The character development was really lacking. It really lacked the emotion that you want to get invested with the movie.
Yeah.
And like
it was flat.
Right. And these last ones, like the acting has been pretty good. The scripts have been pretty good. Like they're returning. The
production design is good.
Yeah. They're returning to something that's like aiming at emotional investment and not just lightsaber fights.
But like it's still like my criticisms of it is like it's a little. It's all rushed.
Yeah.
There's like this rushed feelings in these movies where they're just, and you could see it in the characters. Which is ironic
since this last one was like 2.5 hours long. Yeah,
that's right.
It did move. Did move at a clip.
Yeah, but like the characters are almost, they're all like speaking over each other. They're rushing out to get jokes, you know. Yeah. It's just like a rushed feeling to it all. There's not, it's like I want them to breathe a little more. You know, one of the things I love about the original Star Wars, A New Hope, is that, you know, it was made by George Lucas, who was this, you know, independent experimental filmmaker who liked, you know, Kurosawa movies and liked weird avant-garde European movies and stuff that he pulled all, from all his, like, sources.
Right.
And that comes across in this movie where you've got, like, a lot of, like, I don't know if I'm going to use this word correctly, like, mise-en-scene of, like, where they land on the Tatooine world, the droids, and you're following these characters around for, like, 10-15 minutes in this, like, bleak, like nothing landscape.
Yeah.
And that's like almost like an experimental like indie film thing to like have like show like this breathtaking cinematography but like in a with like weird non-characters and you don't have no idea what this movie's gonna be about. And it's like but now in like all the movies they're like everything is happening every second, you know what I mean? There's no like mystery and wonder as much. It's all just like blah blah blah, like right in your face.
Well, it also like continues to hit kind of the same beats as what was successful in episodes 4, 5, 6. The
original
6.
Trilogy,
you know. So like,
they're playing on them. They're like DJ mixing fans, them.
But exactly. And it's like they'll tweak it just enough so it feels kind of different. But if you're like zooming out, you know, like a lot of like the plot points are there in the same sequence with the same like volume on them.
Did you say this to me? It's like you said something. It's like you can almost see them trying to outsmart themselves at times.
Yeah,
like you can feel them overthinking each like plot point and each like how are we gonna like spin audiences you know expectations here and here.
Right.
You're like, oh, this would be the expected thing to do, so we can't do it. We have to like tweak it in this way, or we actually give them what they expected without, you know, but with a twist, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're like constantly like they're trying to pull out every trick in their bag to make it something that's like gonna knock your socks off.
Yeah.
When like it's
you
like
you can feel that it's forced.
Yeah,
that problem.
Like yeah, you just feel their desperation. Like they're just you could feel the filmmakers sweating. There's like so much pressure on the directors, the production, the actors to like make this good.
Well,
because fans are so unforgiving.
On
you know?
The other hand, well, I know, which we're doing like right now. Yeah. So
well, I mean, we're just I think we're doing a good job just explaining like what it really is.
Pat ourselves on the back a little.
Yeah.
But I mean, Star Wars has like a long history with the merchandising and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So like that's always been a part of it, and it continues to be a part of it because you can also see like, okay, fine, like we have to update and make it relevant to current audiences that didn't grow up with the original Star Wars necessarily. But
we want to recreate that feeling that the original Star Wars kids had too.
But they're pulling in modern influences, like they're kind of leaving like avant-garde art films and Kurosawa behind, and even like the brand of humor that they're using is like directly pulled from, you know, like Guardians of the Galaxy,
right?
You know, like
yeah,
it's
you
that
can
same
feel
brand
it,
of humor.
I thought
which
maybe
has been successful lately, so it makes sense that they want to like.
I mean, audiences like levity in films, but at the same time, how much? What's the type of levity to use in a Star Wars movie? It's a little. It's like a tricky question. You know, where does the humor come from? What kind of humor?
Yeah.
You know, the humor was painful in the prequels. Like there was moments that are, I mean, Jar Jar Binks.
Well, it's very like slapstick.
Yeah,
you know?
And or it was like
really
it was like real staid, like super serious characters, but then like moments of ridiculous slapstick.
Yeah.
In the original Star Wars and the original trilogy, the humor was so much more naturalistic and so much more like it may have just come
it was
from
smart humor. I mean, the actors were being
I think
clever
it,
on screen.
That's why I think it would come from like
and
Harrison Ford
humor,
and Carrie
exactly,
Fisher and Mark Hamill were just kind of funny.
And it has to do with this like a confidence and almost like inside jokes that the audience gets to be part of and it
and from the logic of the story.
Right.
You know, like so all right, so now talking about The Last Jedi, I liked it. I had fun. I thought it was, like, extremely well made. You know, the production design is out of this world. It was. I like that they took bold chances with storytelling aspects. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the characters. I like the acting of all the, like, you know, Kylo Ren and Rey and Finn and Poe. Like, I like them all.
Yeah.
But, like, my impression I got coming away from it, it was just, like, a crazy hodgepodge. You know, it's like all the stuff we were sort of just talking about, like where they're just like, you could feel their desperation. The humor is a little like wonky at times. There's like some plot holes, but like the plot hole, the film's almost daring. It's like, yeah, so what? There's plot holes. Like, live with it. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I can live with it. Yeah. And you were talking about, like, to me, after, when we came out of the theater, it's like, oh, they changed the Force around.
Yeah.
Spoilers, I guess. I'm not really saying a spoiler, but you know, no. Like.
Well, I mean, apparently, it, like, they've taken, like, what's the name of that Star Wars cartoon show?
Rebels.
Like, they've taken that as canon and used some of the elements of the Force in that were present in that show that were not in anything previous to it.
I don't think they're, like, directly taking it from that, but they're, like, doing new stuff.
It's fine.
Right. I mean, to me, they're like daring you. It's like, oh, you think you know what the Force is? Like, this is here. See, this is the Force.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I can go along with it. I don't care. I don't, like, need to have it have, like, conform to some expectation I had of it. But it's like I said, there's, like, a hodgepodge element to it. Like, they threw it all into a blender and...
It's kind of like they're testing like to see, like, what our audience is going to like. And then we'll latch onto that and do more of it in our future 50 Star Wars films that we have planned
to think
make.
That's what they're, like, this is, like, a test one?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, that's not a bad thought. They're like, oh, we got to throw it all on the wall and see if it sticks.
Well, because the big criticism that I heard of Episode 7 was that it matched too closely. But then
they were too afraid to make something truly original.
Right, but people kind of were okay with it because they were like, okay, well, it's their first one back.
And the new characters were great.
And they're returning to the originals in a way to kind of, like, guide the audience into, like, this new chapter of Star Wars, right? So everyone was like, that was the criticism, but everyone's kind of fine with it because it's the first one. Well, now they're not doing the first one anymore, so where do they go from here? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, they gotta try out a bunch of stuff and see.
Right. So, that's an interesting insight, yeah. Like, they're just seeing what sticks.
It's a
2.5 hour long movie. It's fucking long.
Right.
And they're like, here's a whole bunch of crazy shit. It's like, we're going to, you know, everyone's going to go see it anyway. So let's see what the fans liked and disliked. And then from there, we'll crack. Because there's been a lot of discussion on the internet. It's like, how much of this did they plan out? And apparently, like, it's almost the impression you get is like they just been going by the seat of their pants a lot of the ways, you know? Mm-hmm. And that. To me, that's, like, true from the very beginning of when this was announced. They're like, oh, Disney's bought Lucasfilm. Oh, the next movie's coming out next year. Like, hold on to your butts. And it's like, so then it's like, whoever they told to make it, J.J. Abrams and, like, Lawrence Kasdan, whoever, like, make this fucking movie now for us, please, and it better be good.
Yeah.
And they had, like, you know, 8 months to make it.
Right.
And it's like, maybe they needed, like, 5 years to, you know, it's
to
like,
really, like, do it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, yeah. So it's like I said, the rushed feeling.
Right. Well, but I think also that's the reason they're pulling from a lot of modern influences, because they're looking at, like, oh, Marvel movies have been really successful. Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy.
And it's all the same company, too.
Has been really successful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what was successful from the last Star Wars and from the original Star Wars that we can pull in, and, you know?
Yeah.
So
they're, like, they're looking to the past but trying to pull out all the new stuff they can to push it forward.
I think they just don't know. I think they just don't,
it's
like,
hard. Because, well, you know why they don't know and you know why it's hard? Because you shouldn't be making anymore.
Well, I mean,
it was a thing in the late '70s, early '80s. It was a phenomenon. It was like Beatlemania. It came out of fucking nowhere. It was one man's, well, not really. It was collaboration, but it was a collaboration of a lot of, like, geniuses, you know, young geniuses making something new, like, of the moment, of the time. And
well,
then
so
even the guy who created
it was an original vision. That's my point, really.
It was
is
a
that
vision,
like
yeah.
it's no longer someone's original vision.
And it's like,
and so, like, you lose a lot of the authenticity of, like, real creativity.
And people thought they wanted this new thing because George Lucas, like, fucked up the prequels. And, like, oh, well, the goal is not to go back to the visionary who's no longer a visionary. You know, the goal is to, like, give it to the fans that know how to fucking make a Star Wars.
Right.
But the question is, like, do they? And the thing about George Lucas, it's like, he had, like, given up on Star Wars
right.
for a long time.
He didn't want to do it.
If he was, like, and I hate to, like, use this analogy, but if he was, like, killed, like, John Lennon, before he could make the prequels. It would have, like, the original trilogy would have stood forever as this mythic, legendary thing. Like, no one ever would have been able to, like, question it or, like, second-guess George Lucas.
Right.
And it's, like, the same thing. If John Lennon never died, the Beatles were reunited in, like, 1991 and probably would have given you, like, a mediocre, like, overhyped, you know, reunion where it'd be like, oh, this is awesome, but then, like, wait, is it, you know, they're all old and who cares anymore, you know? So it's almost like, but, you know, because he's dead, like, the Beatles can never really come back and they get to exist as this, like, legends.
Right.
So it's like here, it's like you're making Star Wars again and you've got all the intention of the world to make this fucking legendary thing to recapture the spirit of the original thing, but you can't ever really do that.
Right. Well, even from George Lucas's point of view, can you imagine living with that weight on your shoulders?
No, he couldn't. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's like collapsed, you know? He was like, you know, he couldn't do it.
Right. Right, but I'm saying like it's understandable. Also, it's like you live in the shadow. Yeah, absolutely. Of your accomplishment.
He's a human, and that like that like bizarrely people who have a negative reaction to these new films, they like bizarrely saying, oh, well, you know, maybe the prequels weren't that bad because George Lucas at least he tried. He was an independent artist, but like that, I don't think that's the message to take out of the prequels either. I mean, it's a nice message to take that yeah, he's a human and he tried, and like the prequels have their faults, and it's like that alone is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think that like the lesson is it's like how much do we like return to an idea where the premise itself is kind of thin as it is.
Yeah.
You know, this is like something from the Red Letter Media guys, you know, the half of the bad guys in Milwaukee. They talk about like this is why they didn't like Rogue One was because they said that the secret is that the Star Wars universe is very narrow.
Yeah.
What fans like is extremely limited. Because they just like the stuff from the original trilogy. They like, you know, lightsabers, the Sith, the Jedi. They like AT-STs. They like X-Wings, and they like TIE Fighters and Star Destroyers. But the more you diverge from what people like and expect, like, the more fans get annoyed. But the problem is, like, the story can no longer be interesting if you keep it narrowed in on stormtroopers and, you know, accurate rebel pilot uniforms. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It becomes like a dress-up play, and it's, like, not like that interesting, you know? So it's like the premise of Star Wars itself is like thin as it is, and that was like cooked into the conceit of the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like it's not the story of the Empire and the Jedi and the Rebel Alliance, and like, you know, it's like it's the story of
Luke and Han and Leia,
that and but like also it's like playing on the idea of like what a pulpy pop culture story is, you know? It's like good guys versus bad guys, black and white, like kind of like these archetypes of storytelling in people's minds, like that's so it's like it's not about the details, it's about like the concept. So but that concept in itself was already like a ironic pop, you know, an ironic thing, you know what I mean? So you can't take something that's like based in irony and like stretch it out with all this richness without like hitting the walls of like what, like why do we care about this anymore?
Yeah.
So does that make sense?
Well, to sum up, if you haven't gone to see Star Wars Episode 8, go to your local theater and you will probably enjoy yourself.
I mean, that was your impression. I'd say like I think you're going to, you won't feel like you've wasted your money. Like you'll feel like, wow, this is like a really like insane movie with a lot of things happening, and it's, you know, it's funny and it's interesting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think if you're a big Star Wars fan, it makes you question like how much more Star Wars do we need? Does the world need?
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely don't think we need Boba Fett the movie or Yoda the movie or Han Solo the movie. You know, like that, and that's all coming.
But are we gonna see those?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and it's like it's that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And do we need more future episodes of these saga movies? I mean, yeah, but like how about like after the ninth one you just say, okay, we're not gonna do any more movies for another 10 years? But they're not gonna do that. They're gonna wanna keep, and that's the problem with
the
Disney
fate is already cemented.
Oh, and that's, we have to talk about, I'm sorry to keep branching off here.
Didn't we say we were not gonna talk for 20 minutes about this?
Well,
it's definitely been 20 minutes.
I know. Alright, I promise this will be quick. The Disney officially bought 20th Century Fox, so that means the X-Men and Fantastic Four are coming to Disney, into the MCU. And forever on this podcast, I've been the biggest advocate of this happening. I have to say that like my mind has shifted, not because narratively I still think it makes all the sense in the world to have X-Men in the MCU. I want to see it. I want to see that Disney big budget like movie magic on
everybody
the X-Men.
Together.
Yeah, I want all that. I want the Marvel Universe reunited. However, there's a grossness of which Disney has acquired this mega corporation and handed Rupert Murdoch $60 billion or whatever.
Yeah.
And that they now control 40% of like all movie releases. And they've reduced the number of big Hollywood film studios from 6 to 5. Mm-hmm. And it was all done on the day that net neutrality was fucking repealed. Yeah. And Disney's going to control more streaming platforms. And like that, like the reality of all that, like, really singed my, like, deep desire to see the X-Men return to the MCU.
The crushing weight of it.
Yeah. And so, and then, like, today, seeing the Star Wars movie, it's kind of like, yeah, it was fun, it was cool, but it's also in the light of all that, plus, like, they're going to make Star Wars every year, and at what point are we going to be, like, totally sick of it, where it's like, I guess I'll just wait for it to come out on, you know, the Disney streaming platform to see it, you know? Like, who gives a fuck if I've missed Boba Fett 2, you know, or...
Yeah.
Like the return of, you know, Finn in the year 2029 or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's something, like, not good about the media landscape and Disney. They're a little bit like the evil empire themselves. Huh. And but as far as my recommendation to see The Last Jedi, I'm happy we avoided spoilers, by the way. I'd say if you're a big Star Wars fan, you can't not see it. You obviously it's unavoidable. It's like Gravity.
I mean, if you're a big Star Wars fan, you've probably already seen it by the time you're listening to this.
Yeah, definitely. And like, so. And The Onion had the greatest headline about it. They said like millions of Americans like dutifully line up to see the next Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Like they're like, and the article's very like millions of Americans lined up just to see it and consume it and give their money and like voice their opinions on the internet.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, going through the motions, like it's their job.
Yeah.
And that's kind of funny. I mean,
here we are.
And here we are doing it on a podcast. Yeah. What millennials we are.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's like, it was cool. It's fun. But like I said, there's a lot of weird stuff going on in the world right now, especially with the, like, things out of balance with, like, just, you know, corporate interests going on. And, I mean, everyone knows what the news is. So
yeah.
It's like nice to get like a Star Wars. Like it is like a pleasant distraction.
Yeah.
And I have to tell this one funny story before we go. My mother, who would never see Star Wars, I think she saw it once in like 1977 as like a 27-year-old. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like I don't know how she old was then. Like around then, you know, as people might have gone to see it. And she saw it once, and like that's it. I don't think she would go back and see the other ones, like Empire, Jedi, definitely not the prequels.
Oh, you mean literally just the one movie,
yeah,
not even the trilogy?
Yeah, she saw Star Wars, and yeah. Like that's what people did. Like right. It was like a phenomenon, you know.
Well, there weren't as many movies out then.
And it was like something to do, you know.
Yeah, right.
So she called me on Friday night. I was at work, and she's like, Will, I saw Star Wars. I'm like, what? You did? She's like, well, I meant to go see Lady Bird, but like, I got confused and I wound up in Star Wars instead. And I'm like, oh my God, Mom, I hope we're not going to have this conversation soon. But anyway, and she's like, and I loved it so much. It was everything I ever could have wanted. I'm like, yeah, but you don't even know what it's about. Like, you didn't see the other one? It's like, it doesn't matter. The opening text caught me all up with it. I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, it was such a beautiful love letter to the Resistance, because she's super political and super liberal.
Yeah.
She's like, it was all, like, I could really relate to the animals in the movie. They were, like, the immigrant experience in America. And I was like, they are? And she's like, yeah. And I was watching it, and I was just thinking about that slimy Marco Rubio, like, giving in on the tax bill. I'm like, you did? And I was watching it today, trying to see if I could pick up an allusion to Marco Rubio, and I saw none.
I guess you see what you want to see.
I know. She's like, after everything we've been through with Trump, it was such, like, a love letter to the, and it was just really speaking to me, like, the old guard. She must have been really touched by Carrie Fisher, you know, who's like around her age or something, and like, you know, poor Carrie Fisher. Like,
yeah.
And I'll say this without spoilers: Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill, the two best aspects in the movie. And it's like, to me, it's like they, and a minor spoiler, they were in a scene for like a minute together. You know, they got to meet in like one little scene, mm-hmm. and that was the best
was
part of the movie.
Yeah,
that was the most emotional, and it made me think like, ugh, why didn't they? I know they wanted to like get away from the old cast and have them be glorified cameos, but it's like you really like the chemistry those actors have, even now in their aged state, and now Carrie Fisher is past.
Yeah.
It's like they had the magic chemistry that made us love Star Wars.
Wait, so finish the story about your mother, because the end. What'd she say at the end? You're like, oh, so you're gonna go see the rest of the movie?
Oh yeah, I'm like, you're gonna go watch episode 7. It's like, nah, I don't really need.
She's like, I get the idea, yeah. or something. Yeah, she say, I get the picture.
Yeah, that's what she said.
So she's like half a nut.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was like so, it really made me smile just to think the whole random story of her just stumbling into the movie theater and really loving it too. So, you know, from that standpoint, like, go Star Wars, go see it, take your mother, you know, they'll probably love it. I mean, it's crazy. It's like, in a weird way, it's funny. It's like my mother, who would never see a movie like that, you know, would never watch a Marvel movie probably. It's like to her, just have her just randomly, like, it's like almost someone like blindfold her, let her into a theater, and it's like, here, what do you make of this?
Yeah.
It's like what they're doing in movies these days, we're kind of jaded. It's like, but to someone who's never seen this shit, it just must blow your brain, you know, back. Like, oh my god.
Well,
yeah. So all right, that's all we have for Star Wars and for X-Men this week. Let's do our plugs. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Follow X-Men Tass on Twitter. Get their book, Previously on X-Men. Join our Facebook group. We'd love to have you. X-Men Task Podcast. Search it out. It's really easy to find. Rate and review us on iTunes. Please give us 5 stars. It goes a long way to spreading the popularity of the show if you like it. Or, you know, rate and download it on whatever podcast service you use, Android, whatever it might be. We will be back next week with the next chapter of the Dark Phoenix saga. That's all I got to say. I'm all out of words.
Well, you know. Goodbye.
I wanted to say more about Star Wars, but yeah, whatever. All right, goodbye.